The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
I wish everybody in the House to give them a warm round of applause.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on an introduction.
Much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to draw the attention of the House to the East Gallery today, where we have 13 students from the Apple Blossom School in Grafton, actually a social studies class taught by Tim Rimple, and also the chaperones Jay Barkman and Gerald Reimer and Marilee Reimer here as well today. The Apple Blossom School is a Mennonite school as part of a very vibrant Mennonite community in the Annapolis Valley. So let's give them a warm welcome here to the House.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Oh, just-in-time delivery, Mr. Speaker.
You ask, you shall receive.
Be careful. We'll see. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Yesterday, I asked the Premier if the government would meet with Dr. Robin McQuarrie about her serious allegations of intimidation by a government official. He told me that a meeting was scheduled for next week, Mr. Speaker, and I will table his statement from Hansard yesterday, but it turns out there is no meeting with Dr. McQuarrie about her allegations next week after all, so I'd like to ask the Premier to clarify, why did he tell the House there was a meeting when, in fact, there isn't?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to tell him and all members of this House there is a meeting next week that Dr. McQuarrie will be part of, which is on Thursday. With his meeting with the Minister of Health and a number of other physicians, as well as the Minister's office attempted to make contact with Dr. McQuarrie specifically about an offset time for her, which there was no response.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, but that's just a little bit too cute. I'd asked the Premier specifically if the Minister would meet with Dr. McQuarrie about her allegations of intimidation. And he said there was a meeting about that with her next week, and there isn't. There's a meeting with maybe other OBGYNs about other issues that she may or may not attend. But for such a simple question, Mr. Speaker, we would have appreciated a more direct response. We're frustrated. I can imagine how frustrated Dr. McQuarrie is to have her name used again in that way when, in fact, there is no meeting on her issues. So, Mr. Speaker, you know, she deserves better. We deserve better answers than that, Mr. Speaker. Will the Premier assure the House that his government will, in fact, meet with Dr. McQuarrie herself about her allegations of intimidation and apologize immediately?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health has said he would meet not only with Dr. McQuarrie, but any physician across this province. And, Mr. Speaker, as the leader of the Conservative Party has already said, he is talking about allegations that there is no foundation, there is no proof, there is no file, Mr. Speaker. What does he want the Minister of Health to apologize for, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, you know what? Dr. McQuarrie herself is the one making the allegations. If the Premier doesn't believe her, he should just stand up in his place and say so. But to laugh it off and to say if she wants to meet, that's fine. Mr. Speaker, that is not good enough. This government has had enough trouble getting its facts straight, whether it's being sneaky with the digital animation industry or being too cute with
order,
the facts.
Order, please. I'd like to get the Honourable Member, Leader of the Official Opposition, to retract the word sneaky as an unparliamentary term. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll retract that word. But the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, they couldn't get their story straight about whether they were meeting with Dr. McCoy or not. They can't get their story straight about what they're doing with the digital animators. They may seem unrelated, but the trend is clear, Mr. Speaker. Why can't this government get its story straight on basic matters of fact about whether there's meetings or not and what they're doing with our digital animators?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to again remind him that Dr. McCoy is meeting with the Minister of Health next week. Mr. Speaker, I also want to remind him we led the country in export growth. Mr. Speaker, I want to remind him again that we've seen our population go up. Mr. Speaker, we're beginning to see substantial private sector investment in this province. Mr. Speaker, those are all positive numbers that is moving this province in the right direction.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's been almost 48 hours since the McNeill government announced a new tax credit for animators, and Nova Scotians still aren't clear about the details. On Wednesday, the government announced the details of the credit in a press release. On Thursday morning, they quietly changed those details without any formal announcement. And then last night, when the minister was asked to explain how the new tax credit would work, she was unable to do so. So for the benefit of this House and for the people working in Nova Scotia's animation industry, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier if he could please explain specifically what percentage of labour and production costs are covered by his government's new animation tax credit.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all those, Mr. Speaker, in the animation community who have been working with government to ensure that when we release the animation tax credit, Mr. Speaker, with the digital tax credit, that it works for them. I want to thank them again for sitting down with the Minister of Finance, Department of Finance, to ensure that they can walk through those steps. And after, Mr. Speaker, that clarification is made with the industry, we'll be more than happy to share it with the Leader of the Democratic Party.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Work in progress, I guess, Mr. Speaker, is what I'm hearing from the Premier. For today, Mr. Speaker, there are hundreds of young people in Nova Scotia who work as animators, and DHX Studios in Halifax alone employ more than 150 people. These people and their families have been living in limbo for the past month, worried about the future, and Mr. Speaker, they were given some hope on Wednesday only to have it taken away a few hours later. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is to the Minister of Finance. How was it that her department issued two different press releases, a fact sheet about the animation tax credit that contained incorrect information?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question. And the question really is not about the press release, it's about the fact sheet. The fact sheet was clarified in answer to some of the calls that we got from the industry to make it clearer. But the important thing to note, and I want to make it very clear, that the arrangement that is in play with the digital animation is going to be, you know, virtually as good as it was before. The industry is not in jeopardy. The industry, honestly, the industry is not in any jeopardy whatsoever. We are answering their questions. As soon as all of their questions are answered, we'll make it clear to all members of the House.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, this is a government that lives in some virtual reality that none of the rest of us can access, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has a vibrant and a growing screen industry. 1 month and 1 day later, the entire industry is in turmoil because of the McNeill government's decision to scrap the film tax credit. The government's clumsy attempts to try and put a positive spin on the mess they created has only made things worse. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Why won't she do the right thing and scrap her plans to change the film tax credit so a proper and thorough consultation with the industry can take place and a realistic plan that won't damage this industry can be
developed. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think I've said here many times, we appreciate the contribution that this industry makes to the province. We have a clear understanding of the importance of it to our cultural fabric, and we believe that the current arrangement that's in place with the new film and television production incentive fund is going to meet the needs of the film and television industry. We have taken animation out into another tax credit. It is, as I said before, it's going to be really the same as it was before. It is not in jeopardy. It is strong. And that is what's important. We have a responsibility, Mr. Speaker, to the taxpayers of Nova Scotia to ensure that we have good value and that every single industry receives the right level of support and cannot be out of whack. Thank you.
I'm a leader of the official opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Yesterday, amid great confusion and growing frustration, I asked the Minister about the overnight changes that her department made to the arrangement with the digital and animation industry. She agreed to meet personally with industry representatives and walk through the numbers. She even offered to provide more information to the opposition at the time, Mr. Speaker. But this morning, everyone is wondering what on earth is going on with this new arrangement. The Minister committed to provide clarity today, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to ask her if she could now explain to the House why her department issued a press release that was so wrong and why today she needs to actually clarify a fact sheet.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the Leader of the Opposition. Mr. Speaker, as I said yesterday, the press release that was released was not incorrect. I think it's a complex issue, and I think the formula is complex. It's a mathematical formula that the industry needs to understand completely. If they don't understand it, of course, it has a direct impact on their finances. So we've sat down with them yesterday. It was the working group. It was our senior staff that sat down because I asked them to right away sit down and clarify the issue with the industry. We had all the right representatives around the table from Digital Animation Nova Scotia, Screen Nova Scotia, some of the other players in the animation industry, and they're working on answering all of the questions that the industry has. Obviously, it was more complex and it needs to be solved. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, that press release was wrong. It was either deliberately wrong or it was incompetently wrong, but it was wrong. And it would be far
order,
better
please.
For every...
I'd like to remind the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition he's inferring the government issued deliberate misinformation, and that is, in fact, unparliamentary. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
I was open to the possibility it was just incompetent, Mr. Speaker, so I accept your ruling on that. Mr. Speaker, there's a July 1st deadline coming, and the confusion is not going away. It's actually growing every day because of the mess that the government has made of this whole issue. We hoped there was a solution for the animators, but you know what, Mr. Speaker? The entire screen industry deserves an answer to where this is all going, and now it appears the government itself is not even ready for its own July 1st deadline. There is no guidelines in place for how the new fund will work for the screen industry. There is no rules. There is no one to implement the new system, Mr. Speaker, because they got rid of Film and Creative Industries Nova Scotia. How can the minister expect the film industry to adapt by July 1st when her own government is not ready for the deadline itself?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's very important for the members of the House to know that in this year's budget, 15-16, there's $24 million budgeted for the film industry tax credit. That will continue and be spent through this year, taxpayer dollars going out to support the creative industries. That's very important, Mr. Speaker. Everything is in play for this year, and the rules for July 1st will be in play as well and in place.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Scotia Homes in Enfield, one of the most prominent and best-known home builders in our region, is being forced to close their doors for good. In Halifax, single detached starts are down 67% this year, and all other starts across the province are down 85%. Industry leaders like the Nova Scotia Home Builders CEO Paul Pettypaw have been sounding the alarm for months. But after taking office, the McNeill government ended an incentive that help stabilize the home building industry. So my question to the Premier is this: how bad do things have to get before this Premier is willing to reinstate programs like the First Time Home Builders Incentive to help stabilize this important
industry? The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Honourable Member we did not end that program. A program that was brought in by her government had an end date to it. She would know that, Mr. Speaker. I also want to remind this House there is still a rebate for first-time home buyers that is in place. I want to also remind her of the financial challenges that her government left the province of Nova Scotia in. We're working towards getting ourselves back to fiscal health, Mr. Speaker. We continue to work with the Home Builders Association to find out if there's opportunities for us to help work with them to make those investments that they believe would help spur on the industry.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the former government left the province in much better financial shape than the one that we inherited. Mr. Speaker, the McNeill government is desperate. They're desperate to tell people it's not their job to create jobs. And now we're beginning to see the accumulated effect of this do-nothing approach, Mr. Speaker. Since this government came to power, the employment rate has decreased by 3.5%, and our province has lost more than 25,000 jobs. Mr. Speaker, housing starts are hitting record lows, and businesses employing people are closing. My question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is why is ignoring backbone industries like home building when experts who know our economy best are telling him he has a role to play?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There isn't a sector in this province that doesn't look to government to provide them money, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, under the Democratic Party, there was no limit to how much they were prepared to throw at every sector in this province, Mr. Speaker, which leaves us with a tough situation in this province. There is no question, Mr. Speaker, there are challenges facing some sectors in this province. We're also beginning to see some turnaround, beginning to see some investment. I'm looking forward as the population grows. New immigrants are coming into this province looking for new properties, Mr. Speaker. That's a positive thing. We've seen our nominee program, Mr. Speaker, increased by 50%. Those people are going to need a place to live, look, and work and play in this province, Mr. Speaker. We're beginning to see the resource sector turn around for the first time in a very long time. Those will be good-paying jobs, Mr. Speaker, across this province. Mr. Speaker, these incremental changes will put this province on a solid foundation to be able to move forward, Mr. Speaker, and with the private sector driving job growth, not the public sector.
Gamble member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Community Services. Nova Scotians receiving income assistance from the provincial government often find themselves in a situation where they're trying to get back on their feet. But lack of employment, the nature of the system, or unfortunate circumstances make that difficult. A constituent recently brought to my attention that the checks issued through income assistance are labelled poverty reduction. This means that wherever they go to cash their check in community, people are going to know that they're on income assistance. Would the minister agree that having poverty reduction label on checks is demeaning in nature?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I thank the member for the question. I believe the check that maybe you're referring to would be the actual poverty reduction check, so it's a classification on it. I do agree with you. I do agree that that doesn't need to be classified and that people don't need to have that further stigma when they're cashing their checks in the bank. Last year, we were able to increase the child tax benefit within Nova Scotia and raise the threshold so that more than 1,200 more families were able to take advantage of that. This year, we've invested $26 million into that program, and the poverty reduction tax credit has approximately $3.5 million in. But I agree with you. There could be a movement to change the classification on the checks so that it doesn't have that stigmatizing language.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Well, my supplementary question would be, will the Minister work towards that end?
The The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will. And thank you for bringing it to my attention.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. This week, Nova Scotia Power was approved to spend $273 million on projects for 2015. And that's up nearly 20% from $228 million approved last year. Mr. Speaker, when Nova Scotians hear about Nova Scotia Power spending more money, they begin to wonder if their rates are going up. And Nova Scotians already pay amongst the highest electricity rates in the country. So my question for the minister is the minister aware of whether Nova Scotia Power will apply for a rate increase this year or not?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Member would be aware, the decisions on the capital spend for Nova Scotia Power and any rate requests are handled by Utility and Review Board, which is independent of government. Certainly, we've seen a number of instances where Nova Scotia Power has submitted and the Board has approved capital investments to help the reliability of the service to Nova Scotians, which is something that we have heard loud and clear, and I'm sure the Board has heard as well. Speaker, as far as what rate requests may be made by Nova Scotia Power, those will be made to the Utility and Review Board, and no such application has been filed today.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the application may not have been made yet, but many Nova Scotians certainly suspect that there is a potential increase, rate increase looming, and that could further drive up costs to families. And the government has said that their plan to open up the electricity market would eventually lower rates. And the Premier said when he was campaigning, eventually the forces of competition will drive our electricity rates down. So my question for the minister is, at what point does the minister expect the forces of competition to actually drive electricity rates down as pledged in the last campaign?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Speaker, last election, Nova Scotians had two options. They had a party led by the Premier that was saying that we were going to break Nova Scotia's monopoly. We also had the leader of the Conservative Party who was magically going to freeze rates. Again, as I mentioned before, he thought he was Elsa from Frozen and that he could just freeze stuff and it would magically happen. Well, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians know that Frozen is an act of fiction, as it was his party's plan for electricity. Nova Scotians voted for a real plan. We brought in legislation that will allow competition in this province. We have broken the monopoly, and in the spring, the Honourable Member and all members of the opposition will see the results of competition in this province for electricity.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Seniors PharmaCare program helped seniors aged 65 and over with the cost of prescription drugs. There are more than 120,000 Nova Scotians currently enrolled in the program. Earlier this year, the minister eliminated the funding ratio that required the government to pay 75% of the cost to operate that program, with seniors paying the remainder, 25%. So I'd like to ask the minister, what will be the new ratio that seniors will be required to cover this year for the Seniors PharmaCare program?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Rather than move the 25% plus or minus 1%, then 2%, 3%, it would have been 4% this year at 29%. In fact, the time had come to change that formula. And what I am pleased to say is that by taking that fixed formula off, we're able to add more pharmaceuticals for seniors in the province this year.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
I wish the Minister of Community Services would talk to the Minister of Health, because there was no answer. It was a simple question. What percentage, Mr. Speaker? So the seniors are going to be paying for more of those drugs, Mr. Speaker, and I think the savings should have went back to the 120,000 seniors that pay for that program. Mr. Speaker, 2014 and 15, seniors contributed more than $40 million towards the cost of seniors' PharmaCare program. With more seniors coming into the program who are paying full premiums to the program, it's starting to look like a revenue generator, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister of Health is if seniors are going to pay more for the PharmaCare program, what is the minister going to do when the program generates more revenue?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the member opposite, former Minister of Health, realizes that we have not changed the premium for seniors pharmacare. We have not changed the copay. We know that we have 35 seniors a day that are turning 65. Most are joining the program. With the additional funds, we will, in fact, be able to cover more of the required drugs for seniors in our province.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Internal Services. Mr. Speaker, in his closing remarks on Bill 89, the Minister said, and I quote, "If the mill was not operating by chance, we would be cleaning up the Boat Harbour area in a much sooner time frame than 4.5 years. He also said, quote, "This bill is about closing the Boat Harbour effluent treatment plant. It is not about what the mill will do with its wastewater after the closure. That will be determined in discussions with the mill." And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. My question for the Minister is quite simple. Can the Minister explain whether or not he expects Northern Pulp to be operating in 2020? And could he clarify whether his government believes that a new effluent treatment facility is the sole financial responsibility of Northern Pulp?
The Honourable Minister of Internal Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I've said many times, if Northern Pulp is operating in this province or not, that is their decision, not this government's. I have also said that this government has a role to play in a new effluent treatment facility plant with Northern Pulp, and we're looking forward to having discussions with them. We have 4.5 years to have those discussions, and that gives them ample time for construction of that effluent treatment facility, which will take 1 to 2 years. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, we already knew what the Minister had to say because it was an answer, but that's a little different now today, but then again, it is a few days later. Mr. Speaker, it was almost 12 months from the time that the pipe-carrying effluent broke to the introduction of Bill 89. During that time, the Minister and his colleagues would have been working on the bill and consulting, we hope, with impacted parties. So the question is this. During that time, what discussions did the Minister have with Northern Pulp regarding a replacement effluent treatment facility? And would the Minister agree that more honest engagement with Northern Pulp over that period would have provided the mill more time to work towards planning a replacement treatment plant and ensuring that the people that work there have a job to go to?
The Honourable Minister of Internal Services.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier of the province met with Northern Pulp.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of the Environment. Mr. Speaker, property owners around Matitol Lake are concerned about an outbreak of algae bloom in their area. The Matitol Lake Stewardship Committee has indicated that tests taken last fall show that algae are emitting toxins in the lake at levels that are a threat to the health of people there, their pets, as well as wildlife and other fish. This is very troubling to the over 90 homeowners that call Matitol Lake home. Mr. Speaker, will the Department of the Environment assist with further water testing at Matitol Lake?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the member for the question. Of course, throughout the province, there are a number of regions where, from time to time, the organic materials in our lakes and our water systems increase to the point where an algae bloom occurs from time to time. The Department of Environment, in particular, in participation with the Department of Health, do assess water qualities at times. So certainly if residents from the area want to reach out to their local office, the Department of Environment, they'd certainly be in a position to see about assisting.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister for that answer. The Matitol Lake Stewardship Committee has reached out to the local Department of Environment officials, and the response so far has not been encouraging. They have been advised that there's only $500 in the budget this year for water testing in Cumberland County. I'd like to ask the Minister if he can confirm if that is the case, that there's only $500 available for water testing in all of the lakes of Cumberland County, and if so, will he see to it that the local office is able to assist the residents of Matitol Lake with this important issue?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, what I can advise the member opposite, the official leader of the opposition, that in fact there are a lot of watercourses in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, that fall under the purview of the Department of Environment. And, Mr. Speaker, the resources of the department are dispersed as needed across the province. We try to assess our environmental concerns on a needs and risk-based approach, Mr. Speaker. So, of course, Mr. Speaker, when we're going through the budgeting process, we make our decisions based upon estimates, based on past history, Mr. Speaker. That's likely what would have resulted in the estimates and the budgeted amount for that particular region cited. But, Mr. Speaker, I can assure the member opposite, and all members of this House and the people of Nova Scotia, that we assess based on the needs and the risk to the environment and public health. So, Mr. Speaker, again, once we assess the circumstance of that particular site, we would be happy to take a look and dedicate the resources if necessary.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of TIR. Mr. Speaker, for the second consecutive year, CAA has recognized the Gillis Point Road in Washabuck, Victoria County, as the worst road in Atlantic Canada, and I'll table that. The Department's 2015-2016 five-year plan for highways includes 3.5 kilometres of paving on the St. Columba Road, with the new paving ending at the Gillis Point Road, and I'll table that. Additional work to the Gillis Point Road is not included for the projects for the next 5 years in the Department's five-year plan. So the question is, will any work be done on the Gillis Point Road in the next year so that it will not be recognized as the worst road in Atlantic Canada for a third consecutive year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And certainly the work that CAA does to create awareness around roads that have soft spots and are in need of repair is certainly valuable for that public conversation. As the member knows, the CAA process is voting from those particular communities, so it's a good way for people to get their road concerns on the map and in conversation, not publicly. With respect to the Gillis Point Road, we do have 3.5 kilometres dedicated. Mr. Speaker, this is a significant investment. I've made no secret about it. It's an important road for the community, but at the same time, it is a volume issue. We've got 23,000 kilometres of road, Mr. Speaker. We do what we can. So the plan is to pave the 3.5 kilometres of the entrance of the road. That's where predominantly the residents live. And then after that, we're going to look at chip seal, some rehabilitation. We're going to do what we can to fix this road. We know it's important, Mr. Speaker, but it's about the fiscal realities. We'll certainly do our best.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank the Minister for his answer. Mr. Speaker, at a meeting I attended in Little Narrows a couple of weeks ago, this road was brought up by the people in the local area. Anybody familiar with this part of Cape Breton knows that Iona area attracts many tourists who tour the local roads to enjoy the scenery of the Bedore Lakes and the area's Gaelic culture. We also want to ensure that bad publicity such as this for the area does not discourage visitors from coming to this beautiful part of our province. So the question I have for the Minister, in establishing priority roads for the Department's five-year plan, does the Department specifically consider the amount of traffic from tourists in the summer months?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, there's a number of factors that go into these projects. Obviously, volume is the big one, commercial value and what commercial activities are on the road. Of course, the impact for trucking, for vehicles, residents in the area, and the tourism impact in the summer. It is part of the conversation, Mr. Speaker. Our engineers look at all kinds of factors. They're human beings. They talk to the people organically in those communities. They get a sense as to what the importance is, and certainly we'll do our best, Mr. Speaker. And there is limited funds. We spend $420 million as a department. It's a lot of money for transportation in the province to cover our 23,000 roads. But at the end of the day, there's always a deficit, so we try to catch up, Mr. Speaker. And the member himself has a number of roads that he would like done, and that's the reality in Nova Scotia. We're doing our best. We're meeting with MLA stakeholders, all people on the ground, and we're listening to what their priorities are, and we're adjusting our fiscal plan accordingly. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Minister of Environment. In the budget, we learned about the McNeill government's decision to eliminate funding for travel planning programs run by the Ecology Action Centre. This annual funding allowed two coordinators to work with 24 schools across the province to help plan safe walking routes, trails, and marked crosswalks. They also promoted walking school buses to get more kids walking or biking to school. The program helped kids stay active, helped to keep cars off the road, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. My question to the minister is, I'd like to ask the Minister of Environment why he supports his government's decision to eliminate these programs.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what really I think the question that was asked there, as I understand it, is the member opposite is asking why I support this government's budget. Mr. Speaker, I support this government's budget because this government recognized that we came into a province that couldn't sustain the fiscal road and path that we were on, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government, Mr. Speaker, made the took a look at all of the programs that operate in all of our departments, Mr. Speaker, just like my colleague in the Department of Health did, assessed based upon the core mandates that we have within our departments and made the difficult decisions that we had to make, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that, we get ourselves back onto a fiscal plan and get this province back on a path towards fiscal prosperity. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess that when you create a deficit by paying $600 million off the pension plan in 1 year instead of 12 years is your own creation, not the former government's. So, Mr. Speaker, walking to...
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's has the floor.
I'm sorry the facts hurt. Walking to school used to be a common thing for kids, but over time this trend has changed. Now only 23% of kids walk or bike to school in Nova Scotia, even though 40% live close enough that they could. This means more cars and buses are on the road, sending greenhouse gases into our atmosphere. The Ecology Action Centre says these programs were working and behaviours were starting to change and was also part of the obesity preventative plan for our province. I'd like to ask the Minister if he will commit to working with his fellow Cabinet members like the Minister of Education and the Minister of Health to find the way to reinstate this funding so more kids have an opportunity to walk to school, and please give us the real answer.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the member opposite for the question. Of course, Mr. Speaker, both as a member of this government, Mr. Speaker, and as a parent of four small children, Mr. Speaker, of course I encourage and support the notion of having children where possible to walk to school and participate in physical activity, Mr. Speaker. With respect to how many children and the difficult challenges for walking, Mr. Speaker, I encourage the member opposite to consider the process that her government put community schools under during their time in government, Mr. Speaker, about the challenges for small community schools being closed in rural areas so that those students can't walk to school, Mr. Speaker, any longer, and ignoring that throughout the process, Mr. Speaker. And with respect to the budgeting process, Mr. Speaker, I encourage them to take a look at the budget that they brought in just after they took office in 2009, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. The government's announcement that they would allow for an uncapped increase on tuition fees took many by surprise. Students remain cautious over what this could mean for their tuition rates in future years. I assume the minister and her staff have an idea as to what institutions plan to raise their rates. So my question to the minister is, could the minister tell the House whether she has received any indication from any universities other than CBU that they will take advantage of this one-time uncapped increase in tuition?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, and I'm happy to report to him that initial talks with universities indicate that about two-thirds of students will not see an uncapped tuition in the coming years. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Over the past several years, students and their families have a degree of certainty about how much tuition will increase. Now they are left wondering what increase may be around the corner. They also wonder if the increase will come all at once or spread over several years. Could the minister detail if she's provided the universities with any direction or limitations on how they apply this tuition adjustment?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, Thank you to the honourable member for the question. Mr. Speaker, we've been very clear with the universities that we expect them to manage their institutions. Mr. Speaker, we think it is right and reasonable that universities be allowed to charge similar amounts for similar programs. As the honourable member probably remembers, that when the tuition freeze came in, there were some universities, like Cape Breton University, for example, that had tuitions that were much lower than elsewhere in the province. I want to assure the honourable member that at the end of Cape Breton University's tuition market adjustment, their students will still be paying below the average tuition across the province. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Health. Prescription drug abuse is a significant problem in Nova Scotia. In many communities, Mr. Speaker, young people are getting access to opiates and other prescription drugs. They become addicted and led down a path that has devastating results. Unfortunately, for many, rehabilitation services and detox is not available when they decide and they want to turn their life around. Bed shortages are a huge problem all over this province, and unfortunately, often the window for choosing sobriety closes quickly as people become more and more addicted. Funding for addiction services was cut in this year's budget. So why did the minister cut funding for addiction services when bed shortages are already plaguing Nova Scotians across the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And first of all, I want to again inform Nova Scotians that that we in the province have taken the most advanced steps in terms of developing a curriculum in our schools around alcohol, around opiates, around cannabis. And I know it's getting great accolades, and I think that's the first area is obviously prevention. When it comes to treatment, while that line item in the budget has changed, the overall delivery in regards to the number of beds, whether it's in Lunenburg, whether it's in Soldiers Memorial, whether it's in Amherst, all of those beds remain open and available for treatment.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we know that one way of combating prescription drug abuse is to control the source. And I know when the Minister was on this side of the House, he spoke a lot of prescription drug use. And last year in the budget estimates, the minister spoke of a high-volume prescriber program initiated by the department and prescription drug monitoring program. Will the minister table any figures or results from that program that indicate the number of doctors identified and any increases or decreases in prescriptions for opiate drugs?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to say that the College of Physicians and Surgeons have identified the top 100 doctors in the province in terms of the amount of opiates prescribed. They've all been obviously sent letters and asked to review their practice, and we are developing, as maybe the member may know, a just-in-time information in all pharmacies across the province. And now when a patient goes to the ER and may be prescribed an opiate, we have, again, a just-in-time information on whether or not they may be getting a prescription somewhere else.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the universities in Nova Scotia have been put on notice. If any university enacts provisions to suspend collective bargaining rights to determine research priorities in Bill 100, they'll be sanctioned by the Canadian Association of University Teachers. Mr. Speaker, sanctions imposed by COUT would be a black eye on Nova Scotia and tarnish the reputation of our province's world-class university. So I'd like to ask the minister, did the minister consider this negative consequence, like sanctions, that this legislation could mean for Nova Scotia universities?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question, I think. But what I would like to remind the Honourable Member about is what is actually in the legislation, Mr. Speaker. There are two parts in the legislation. The first part, Mr. Speaker, requires our universities to be more accountable for the funds they spend, something that his government did not do, Mr. Speaker. So government will have a better picture of what's going on at our institutions well in advance. So if there are problems developing, Mr. Speaker, we'll be able to spot those well in advance. The second part of the legislation, Mr. Speaker, gives universities a process by which they can restructure. It gives them a safe place to go so they don't have to go into receivership, so they don't have to go into bankruptcy, Mr. Speaker, so that they don't have to deal with those particular processes in which students and faculty and unions will have no say whatsoever. Thank you.
John Moe, House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, I'm trying to recall the last time a university went into receivership here in Nova Scotia or in Canada. I don't know, Mr. Speaker. If sanctions are... I touched a nerve over there, Mr. Speaker. They're waking up. It's Friday afternoon. If sanctions are imposed on Nova Scotia universities...
Order, please. The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sanctions would affect student enrollment, finances, donations, the university's reputation. Mr. Speaker, sanctions are rarely ever imposed by COUT and only used in serious cases when the rights of academic staff are breached, says the executive director of COUT. Mr. Speaker, can the minister detail the effects that sanctions will have on attracting students to Nova Scotia if they're enacted?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I would like to point out, Mr. Speaker, that the first part of the legislation should ensure that that no university has to use the second part of the legislation, and they could have brought in legislation like that themselves. But, Mr. Speaker, they did not. And, Mr. Speaker, I would furthermore point out that what would really damage a university, quite frankly, is if they did have to go into receivership, if they did go into bankruptcy. What we have told universities is that Nova Scotia taxpayers cannot continue to bail out universities that fail to live within their means, and we expect them to act accordingly. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, yesterday the Minister of Energy explained what he was doing to bring affordable home heating to Nova Scotians, referencing Heritage Gas. But Heritage Gas has stated that very few communities in this province will be served under their business model, and there are certainly no plans for Heritage to bring their service to residents of Richmond. A free flow of natural gas into Nova Scotia is what is needed to bring affordable home heating here. Can the Minister tell us what he is doing to bring the Marcellus supply via pipeline to this province?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, just a correction for my colleague from Inverness. The fact is there already is natural gas coming to Richmond County. It's fact coming to Point Tupper. So I know that's a distance away from his home, but just wanted to point that out to him. We have met with Heritage Gas. Heritage Gas has been expanding in various communities around the province and has new technologies that they are looking at as well. They are also in negotiations with the pipeline companies around the eastern U.S. seaboard to assure that there is a supply here in Nova Scotia. As well, as I've mentioned before, we are working closely with the Alton Gas Project, which presents an opportunity to do storage of gas, especially during the summer months when the prices are low, so that we can avoid price spikes during the wintertime, which potentially could be a saving of $17 million for Nova Scotia consumers.
Now, I'm a member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there was some noise in the chamber, but I actually did state residents of Richmond, but I can appreciate some Point Tupper, and there are some good developments, as the Minister mentioned. But yesterday I mentioned about a homeowner in Ontario paying $950 for the year for their heat and their hot water. Some Nova Scotians are paying that here every 2 months in the wintertime with Nova Scotia Power. Affordability has been something that's been missing from energy policy in the province. Breaking the monopoly is the answer by this government. But I say for what, Mr. Speaker, because all of the current energy inputs are exactly what's driving the cost of power rates. There are three companies who see value in exporting natural gas from Nova Scotia around the world. Why doesn't this government see the value in having a plan to bring that gas here for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Speaker, once again, as I mentioned, during the last election, Nova Scotians had an opportunity to choose between our premier, who was talking about breaking the power monopoly, making sure that Nova Scotians had a choice in their energy supply, and making sure that there was competition in the province that would be led by the private industry to give Nova Scotians a choice. On the other hand, we had the leader of the Conservative Party, who once again was trying to do his best imitation of Elsa in Frozen by suggesting we could simply freeze power rates in the province. Mr. Speaker, on behalf of Nova Scotians, I would encourage the Honourable Member and all of his colleagues, when it comes to the issue of trying to freeze power rates, as was famous in the movie Frozen, let it go.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Ministry of Natural Resources. Department of Natural Resources 2014-15 business plan outlined the department's intention to reduce the percentage of forested land harvested by clear cut to no more than 50% of all harvests. Now I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In 2011, 96% of all harvests were done with a clear cut harvesting method. 2014-15 business plan indicated that data for subsequent years was not available. So my question to the minister is the data currently available, and could the minister inform the House if his department has met this goal?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In fact, we are on track to reaching our target of reducing the percentage of the harvest as a clear cut. I believe in 2012 that number was approximately 75%. We have brought that down to around 64%. We're well on our way to reaching 50% in this province, Mr. Speaker. But more importantly, for the first time, we are actually opening up this process to Nova Scotians. We have maps online for every Nova Scotian to see what harvest is happening where, so they can provide feedback to us, better informed our policy and decision-making, Mr. Speaker. And that is resulting in excellent changes to the way we do forests in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
I must thank the Minister for that answer, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, ensuring our forested lands are harvested in a responsible and sustainable fashion ensures that future Nova Scotians will benefit from our forest natural resources. The 2015-2016 business plan does not specifically outline the government's intention to reduce clear-cutting to 50% or less of total harvests, as was the case in the previous year's plan. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. It also does not provide updated stats regarding progress on the reduction of clear-cutting. My question to the minister, could the minister inform this House of the timeline the Department of Natural Resources has in place for the reduction of clear-cutting in this province?
Yama, Minister of Natural Resources. Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business with the Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, I move that you do now leave the chair and that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole House on bills.
The House will now recess for a few minutes while it resolves itself into the committee of the whole House on bills. We now stand recessed.